And welcome to Rangers Rundown, your 2018 podcast home for all things Rangers. In today's episode, episode 3, we'll be introducing a new voice, saying a temporary farewell to an old one, going over our most recent split with the Oakland Athletics, previewing our upcoming showdown with the Toronto Blue Jays, pouring one out for an actual national holiday and the only important sporting event anyone should follow, opening day for minor league baseball, and getting ready to talk about all things Rangers. I am Max. This is Mike.
Hi, guys. This is Mike.
And that silence you're hearing now is tragically Hayden, who should join us this weekend. All right, Mike. So first time being on the pod. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm really excited to join you guys.
That is clearly the words of someone who has not yet listened to the Rangers Rundown podcast. So how you feeling about the season?
You know, obviously it's very early, but I guess the team is about where I expected them to be. You know, you can't say rebuild, but that's kind of what they're doing.
It's a dirty word.
It is. But I've been a fan of the Rangers for many decades, and I'm used to being in this position as a fan. So you focus on the young stars and hope to see them develop and grow into superstars of the future and worry less about the wins and losses.
It's a good position to have, especially as a Rangers fan. I feel like that's kind of our lot in life, maybe more frequently than for others.
Yeah, you might be right.
And we've had a couple of those young guys come together. Obviously, Gallo's having a very Gallo start to the season, bunch of strikeouts, getting some dingers, hitting through weird shifts. A couple of the other dudes are putting up numbers. I think we're getting what we really hoped for out of Ryan Rua and Drew Robinson, which is the ability to nominally play defense while maintaining a pulse.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to get a whole lot else out of them, although I heard a stat during the radio broadcast today that Robinson, his ops, at least maybe it was coming in today, was somewhere around 925, which was, I found kind of shocking. Obviously,
yeah,
it's a small sample size.
In the 900s.
Yeah.
And he was very three true outcomes coming into today, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. It's pretty much all home runs, walks, or the big one, strikeouts.
And we've seen that before.
Yeah, it's not the first time the Rangers have had a three true outcomes guy. Although I imagine if you'd ask people who the biggest three true outcomes guy in the AL West would be a week into the season or at any point of the season, they probably would have correctly answered a Texas Ranger, but I'm not sure they would have come up with Drew Robinson over Joey Gallo.
Yeah, most probably wouldn't even know who Drew Robinson is.
That's a pretty fair cop. So how much of the A's series did you manage to see?
I saw two of the games, listened to one on the radio, like I referred to just a minute ago. So, you know, I try to see at least part of, if not all of, most of the games. But when I'm not watching, I'm definitely following up. I'm reading the articles about the game. I'm perusing the box score, see what stands out to me. I follow the Rangers very closely.
That's what we like to hear here on the Rangers Rundown. So game one, obviously, was Bartolo Colon making his season debut. We had some predictions Hayden and I did on the last episode. Mine turned out to be a little bit closer to the truth than his. I think he predicted that he would make it out of the first inning after allowing 400 home runs. Six innings, one run, one walk, four strikeouts. Although the bullpen ended up kind of blowing that game a little bit. Jepsen and Diekman did not perform particularly well. Deeks had some control problems to start the season, although definitely looked better today. Obviously, it's a pretty small sample, so not relievers who've only got a couple of innings. But you know, as a guy who's had some struggles with control in the past, and that was his big red mark when he was coming down, something to, I think, keep an eye on. Game 2, Rangers 4, Oakland 1. Cole Hamels putting out his very, very best Yu Darvish impression? What was that?
I really don't know. I guess it's the new and improved Cole Hamels. He added a slider to his repertoire this year, and and he was told by the coaching staff that he needs to mix in the changeup a little more often because that's definitely his out pitch. And he threw I think it was a combined 14 sliders and changeups in that game, and got a lot of swings and misses off of those.
Yeah, whatever he was doing, it was very much working. 11 strikeouts through 5 innings, which I believe is a Rangers record for strikeouts in that few innings, right?
It is.
It was a day for records between Hamels, going ham, as I have in my notes here, because I'm a very funny person. Joey Gallo became the fastest player to get to 50 home runs in Rangers history. That's pretty fun.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's 11th fastest all time. I tried to do some internet research to find out who else was on that list. This was published by someone on Twitter, but could not track down the details of who was ahead of him on the list. I do know Joe DiMaggio was one place ahead of him. He did it in 4 fewer at-bats, I believe. But if you think about all the sluggers past and present, and Joey being 11th on that list, that's pretty elite company.
Yeah, it's definitely a good place to be. Led to a fun discussion between the three of us, going through guys who had the most home runs, or the fewest at-bats per home run, were Mr. Gallo to qualify. I believe he would have finished 3rd on that list, behind only number 2, Babe Ruth, pretty easy to guess. Just ahead of Barry Bonds, also fairly easy to guess. And the one that was surprising to all three of us, I think, in that the all-time home run or at-bats per home run leader is Mark McGwire.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise to me.
Not the most shocking thing. I wouldn't have been surprised to hear he was top 10 or 20, but that was certainly pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would have expected Barry Bonds to be number 1, but I guess you have to look at pre-steroids era, but Barry Bonds versus post, because after he started taking steroids, his at-bats per home run were insane, somewhere in the 6 to 8 range, I believe.
Yeah, but if we pulled individual seasons, it'd be pretty upsetting. It's just the kind of numbers we shouldn't be having to look at.
Right.
But those two were not the only records that are being set in that game, as you pointed out in our precast discussion. We had one more record that was tied then and busted today. You want to lead us into our promised land here?
Absolutely. So on Tuesday, Beltre singled and tied Rod Carew for the most hits by a Latin-born player, which was pretty impressive. Joined him at number 25 on the all-time hits leader list. And then today he got another hit, and that tied him with Ricky Henderson on the list, which was fabulous to hear because they were playing the A's on Ricky Henderson Field.
Yeah, and the broadcast did a pretty good job of cutting over to Ricky as many times as is physically possible during a baseball show, just to catch all of his facial expressions.
I love that.
Yeah, it's maybe a fitting time to do it, at the very least.
Absolutely. He's not one of my favorite players, I'd have to say.
Ricky Henderson?
No. No, being an old school guy, Ricky was one of the first ones to be a real showboat, to really ham it up on the field, and that rubbed a lot of the old school guys the wrong way. Obviously, it's got a much larger place in baseball now, but it was it wasn't very typical back in the day.
Yeah, I guess we are kind of seeing things shake up a little bit going forward. What with our Yasiel's Puig and our Rougned's Odor.
Yeah, it's a much different game. It's who can have the best bat flip and who can admire their home run the longest from home plate.
I am 100% here for it, I got to say. Have you seen any of Harper's home runs this year?
I have not.
Yeah, he's been working on a system where he very respectfully watches the home run and then places the bat on the ground and then begins his trot. I'm pretty appreciative of it. No flipping whatsoever.
Hey, as long as it's not Joey Bats flipping it towards the Rangers dugout, I'm happy.
Yeah, as long as we just never have to see that play again, which means we'll see it roughly 1,000 times this upcoming series.
About as many times as Cowboy fans see the Dwight Clark catch versus the 49ers in the NFC Championship game back in the day.
Yeah, we're going to get that one played on loop a whole ton, I kind of think. I guess it comes to a bunch of things that we're going through in athletics, where you just pick one of the most traumatic experiences for the opposing fan base and play it as many times as possible on any broadcast. As an Alabama football fan, it's watching Auburn's kick six from a few years ago. That'll Ouch. Play a good 12 times on any CBS Alabama broadcast, even if Auburn has nothing to do with it. They're still going to play it. And a couple other notes on the Oakland series that I wanted to run through. In episode 2, we talked about how what Oakland mostly does is force you to stay up very late at night watching 3-1 losses with anonymous people like Chad Pinder or my favorite, Jed Lowry, doing weird things. The big one there was Lowry again in this series. Unsurprisingly batting, I think, 400 over the course of it, on basing nearly 500. We just could not get that dude out. Got 3 hits today. Just doing annoying stuff constantly.
Yeah, there's a lot of things the A's do that are annoying. And it's baffling to me how they can put together a competitive team year after year with that incredible, what was it, about 10,100 in attendance today? That great fan base that they have. And now you can add.
Man, I don't think they even cracked 10 in the first 3 games.
They didn't. And and now they add Lucroy, and Lucroy throws out darn near every Rangers base runner in the entire series. So we've got another reason to hate them all together now.
I'm not going to understand why we kept running on him.
No, they should have stopped. he was proving a point.
Yeah, the Robinson send early in the game, fine. If you're going to run some bases, in theory, the team's starting center fielder is a guy to be running the bases. We weren't expecting it to be Drew Robinson. But, give him a shot. But when we had Elvis run with 2 on, that was just bizarre to me. I don't know why we'd give up that out at third base.
I wonder, how much of that is on the players and how much of that is on the coaching staff? Are they just trying to get their guys to be more aggressive to manufacture runs because they know it's going to be such a challenging season?
There was a lot of discussion in the offseason about how we're trying to be more aggressive on the base paths, and I like aggression. There's a good statistical model that basically points out that teams that are safely stealing the vast majority of the time, guys who are getting over that break-even point, are probably not stealing enough. If you're always safe on your steals, if you're being very conservative and always picking your spots, you're probably leaving opportunities on the table. I'm a big fan of watching guys go out there and run. We've got some pretty surprising athletes on this team, Gallo being the one that always jumps to mind. He's a lot faster than I think the average fan really appreciates, and probably faster than most other players really get. I don't know how much time major league players really get to watch other baseball games during the season. So, sending Gallo a few times when you might not otherwise do it, I'm fine with that. But this series against Lucroy, we just kept poking the bear, and it did not go very well for us.
No, it did not. And, I like aggressive base running myself, but I think there's got to be a sweet spot in there somewhere. To me, Ron Washington, back in those championship years, I mean, his guys were aggressive, but it seemed like they didn't do it too much. They would tap the brakes. They wouldn't take that extra base if it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, so it'd be another thing to kind of keep an eye on going forward in the season. Is the aggressive base running early just guys settling into the season, or are we going to see just a ton of questionable or maybe interesting or highlight-worthy base running moves throughout the course of the year?
It will be something fun to watch.
Yeah, especially with DeShields being gone. This team does definitely shift its position on the base running leaderboards, I think.
Yeah, DeShields really hurts.
Yeah, we didn't have you on last week to go over that. So are you more of a Drew Robinson man? Are you a Carlos Tochi fella? Are you a secret Jerrod Dyson enthusiast?
No, I'm definitely a DDJ fan. I love his speed. I mean, it's really a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I guess maybe since Kitten Face, to make a reference to back in the day, someone with just blazing speed that was always able to challenge anybody's arm. And I like him all around. I'd like him in center field. I think where Drew Robinson hurts us in center field is that he's a capable center fielder, in my opinion. But with Delino, his speed, he could use that to overcome some of the deficiencies on the guys around him. And we need that because Mazzara is not the fastest guy in the world, and neither is Rua.
That's being kind, I think.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta imagine Matt Moore looks at that defense behind him and just, it's just a sigh. It's staring into the abyss. I'm not really sure what the proper response is there.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like ownership didn't have ample opportunities to upgrade at some of those positions in the offseason. So, you know, it is what it is. It's team tank and root for 2020 to get here quickly.
Yeah, I guess. Hayden was definitely pretty low on the front office last week, talking about how with just looking at the depth we had and then not making a move to at least get somebody really truly capable of playing center field in a pinch like this was clearly not a very smart move, and really should have been one that we'd have paid attention to a little bit earlier.
Yeah, there were several things that had me frustrated with the ownership group over the winter. First being that JD said that the 2018 payroll would be similar to the 2016 payroll, and then at the end of the winter you look up and you're about $30 million less than what you were told it was going to be at the beginning of the winter. I guess it was all Ohtani or bust in their eyes, but there were opportunities to upgrade at several positions. I mean, and you don't have to go and get a 33-year-old player. I mean, there are younger players that are available in the market that could contribute when this team is good again. So I think sitting on your hands, you know, with the money that they had to play with, I really wish they would have done something.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to look at that payroll number right now and square that with, like you said, JD's comments and what we've had the last couple of years and say this is a team that decided it wasn't going to be very competitive, I guess. But they seem to decide that based off of not going out and picking players up. I mean, there were definitely guys to be had out there. There were arms to be had, you know, even late into the free agency period that I would certainly like to see on this team more than, say, Matt Moore or the whatever Doug Fister is bringing to the mound right now. His first start is pretty encouraging. This more recent start, I think we saw some of those struggles that we may be seeing a lot of this year from Doug Fister, where if he's not locating, you know, he doesn't have a ton to fall back on. He's still been largely effective, and I think he's going to be an okay part of this rotation. But you know, there were arms to be had. The big one for us, obviously, is losing Darvish. I think that's a huge step down. It was a pretty disappointing thing to see from an organizational perspective. I think this team with the kind of caliber of arm of a Darvish is a different looking team. It's one that's more encouraged about its future outlook. And I just don't think those guys are going to be available to us next offseason or the year after. You know, there's going to be some interesting arms that come from free agency after, I believe, 2020. But you know, you're always competing for pitchers. The numbers were really low this year. If you'd have been able to add a Darvish or an Arrieta at what I still feel are pretty dang fair contracts, that changes my outlook on the team going forward a lot more than adding Matt Moore or Matt Bush is going to be a starter now or here's Bartolo Colon.
Yeah, I think JD's just doing bits now.
It's all stuff. Just jokes.
Yeah, and that's why I want Colon to be on the team. And, you know, I want Lincecum to be on the team. Just bring on the freak show. I want to go out and get a Colon and Lincecum jersey. I think that would be awesome.
You could do like a half and half jersey.
Oh, that'd be even better.
Colossicum, Col. This is gonna get bad.
Careful.
See, this is why I'm mad that this team doesn't currently employ Ichiro Suzuki. Like, that was the guy I secretly wanted the most this entire offseason.
That would have been great.
I mean, it would have been very fun.
Bring it all on.
just do the whole thing. We're going to go back to 2008, whether you like it or not.
Let's not.
Could have been. Yeah, let's maybe. And second thought, it's a silly place. Yeah, so we have had a couple of encouraging performances. I just started talking about the pitchers. You know, the bullpen has been something that we were really, I think, confused about going into the season. It's always easy to look at your own relievers. As a fan of any baseball team, it's easy to look at your own relievers and say, well, we've really got some high ceilings in here. I think, though, that the Rangers weren't lying to themselves when they look at some of the arms we had available. You know, Kella has been at times a dominant power arm. Alex Claudio is probably my favorite non-Yu Darvish pitcher in the league right now. Jose Leclerc has been encouraging up front. He's got just wicked stuff. Matt Bush, Jake Diekman, same thing. These are guys who, if they're healthy and if they're consistent, are pretty dangerous bullpen guys, which is always the case. And I think we've seen some encouraging early season stuff from most of the right pieces so far. Chris Martin coming over has been pretty effective. I think he's doing kind of what we expect him to do, be a little bit more deceptive than you'd imagine for a fairly straightforward right-handed pitcher. He uses his height. I've really liked it. I've seen that splitter so far this year. Claudio is doing the Claudio thing where he's going to pitch 1,000 innings because it doesn't seem to bother him very much. Did you manage to catch the ninth inning of today's game?
On the radio, yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Nadell touched on it, but I like watching Keone Kella when Keone Kella is angry. And that very much seemed to be the case today.
Yeah, Nadell did mention that. I guess it was after he got called for a balk. I guess he was upset with himself. Is that the general impression that you got?
Yeah. He didn't seem to be getting accusatory or trying to show up into the umpires. I think he was standing there trying to figure out what exactly he was thinking when he kind of double pumped stepping back. It was a day for balks. It just makes you think. I was watching the Nationals game this afternoon, and Strasburg had a bizarre double pump balk coming off the mound. It happens. I think Kella was amped up. It's sort of the way he seems to approach the game. After he got the final strikeout, yelled pretty audibly over the field mics. I'm going to pretend that I couldn't understand what he was trying to say there. But I definitely appreciate seeing an angry Keone Kella pumping gas. Going up in the zone.
Well, the early returns are good. He's 2-for-2 in save opportunities and hasn't given up a run yet. Only one hit in 3 innings. You can't argue with that kind of success.
Yeah, no, I think it's been very encouraging. I'm very much here for Keone Kella. I am a little sad that we had to lose Jose Leclerc already. He was having a great start to the season. He's another guy who I think might be better when he pitches a little angry. Let's a little bit of that emotion come out. I think Leclerc, when he first came up at the end of 16, showed some of that, where he was just coming out there and attacking folks. He's got those really interesting change-ups, and I think he throws a good game. If he can really kind of harness that stuff, he can come back off of this option, and I hope that Bannister's able to explain exactly what was going on. I talked about that on the broadcast today, that it's a difficult conversation for a manager to go to a guy who's performing like Jose Leclerc is and saying, you're having a better season than some of the guys around you, but you're the only one we can option, so we have to send you down. That's a difficult conversation to have, and I hope Jose is able to internalize that and come back and maintain that success.
Well, and I can darn near guarantee that he will be back in a Rangers uniform later this season.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be injuries. There's going to be guys that can't work things out, and they get dropped from the roster. Bullpens are a different bunch, and one guy can be your best guy one year, and then he just can't find the strike zone the next year. So there's a place for Leclerc on this team.
Yeah, for sure. And I just don't think there's a place for guys like Jesse Chavez for very long going forward. I think he's going to be one of the first casualties of this roster, especially once Barnett gets healthy. And then it's kind of a waiting game to see how things shake out. And do we keep Bartolo Colon in the rotation? Are we moving Matt Moore around? I don't see any reason to stop the Mike Minor experiment before we've really let that thread play out. We're obviously going to get another look at Mike
tomorrow,
this week. I think he goes against Stroman on Saturday.
Oh, is it? Okay. Bummer, because yeah, I'll actually be at tomorrow's game. I was hoping to see him.
Oh, look at us going to baseball games.
It's already my third on the young season.
Yeah, it's been 22 years since I stepped into the ballpark, so I'll definitely be pretty envious over here.
You'll be there in spirit.
I will be. I may be there in spirits. Well, we got the Blue Jays coming to town. First game is going to be Marco Estrada versus Matt Moore. Estrada went 7 innings against the Yankees in his first turn, gave up 3 runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, gave up 2 home runs. Historically, Estrada's been pretty good against the Rangers. sort of a soft tosser, and for some reason, those just murder us. Just can't hit these guys. Game two is going to be Stroman and Miner. I'm really looking forward to seeing Mike Miner. I'm not as enthused about seeing Matt Moore a second time, but I think Miner's early results were pretty encouraging. Obviously, he didn't get that depth that you'd really like, but he was going up against what is probably the best lineup in baseball, and a lineup that really eats lefties, and he got the swing and strikes. Hayden, I think, is right here. It just looked like he had a plan coming into that game. That was pretty encouraging for me. And then game three is going to be Jaime Garcia going up against Cole Hamels. It's going to be fun to see if Hamels maintains some of the strikeout stuff, because that last game was really silly. What are you looking for in the Blue Jays series?
I just want the Rangers to be competitive. I want to see pitchers being stretched out longer. So I guess Colon is the only one with a quality start so far to the young season. I want to see guys go in six innings. Yeah. I want to see definitely Hamels. You know, he threw a lot of pitches in that game Tuesday night, and hopefully he can find the strike zone a little bit better and work his way into the sixth and maybe even the seventh inning. That's what I would hope for.
Yeah. I mean, difficult to disagree with that at all. It's going to be an interesting series for a couple of reasons. You know, we are finally starting to get multiple appearances for guys, and, well, you know, stats on the hitting side really don't matter quite yet. It's going to be, I know personally for me, interesting to see how Gallo starts responding. I think his approach has been fairly good. The thing that really stands out to me is that he's getting the ball in the air the vast majority of the time. Almost everything he's doing is going up, and as long as Joey Gallo is putting balls into the air, you know, those home runs are going to come. He's going to start really scorching stuff. He's had a couple of really, really encouraging games. You know, the strikeouts are they're not great, but they're actually fairly okay for Gallo. His BABIP is pretty bad so far, and a lot of the stuff that he's been hitting has just been finding gloves. But what have you seen so far in Joey this year?
Well, yeah, I would say I'm seeing fewer strikeouts. I'm seeing more balls being put into play. I think this is encouraging that he seems more comfortable at the plate. Now, you know, like you said, the ball is finding gloves. But I think a month or two from now, we're going to see solid contact from him. I think for me, if Joey were to get to a point where he had a 250 batting average and a 950 ops, you know, that's about the best you could possibly hope for. And I think that locks him in as a superstar of the future for the Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, pretty difficult to disagree there. Yeah, obviously he went 0 for 5 today, but 0 for 5 with no strikeouts is that's the kind of 0 for 5 I want to see from Joey Gallo if I have to pick 0 for 5s.
Exactly, that's progress.
Yeah. Another guy who's definitely something to be looking at in the early going is Rougned Odor. I like some of what I saw today. He dropped a bunt in the later part of the game that I really quite appreciated. He put it a little bit too close to the first baseline, and Matt Olson was somewhat predictably able to make a very good play on it. But it was a pretty close play. I like Rougned trying to find more ways to get himself on base, you know, willing to experiment a little bit. He had a pretty bad pop in, I believe, the eighth inning when he came to bat with two on. Just went straight up, popped out to Lucroy behind the plate. But his early approach has been at least notable. Is that a fair thing to say about it?
I think so. Yeah, he's not swinging at every pitch that's coming at him. So, again, that's progress. You know, I'm okay with him getting some Ks looking. I mean, he's keeping the bat on his shoulder a little more often, and he's forcing pitchers to actually throw strikes. Now, I think the results of that will come. You know, he's still struggling with the average, but pitchers weren't even having to try last year. They were throwing everything high and tight, low and outside, nothing anywhere near the strike zone because they knew he was an automatic out.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch for me whether or not he maintains this sort of patient approach, if he's still seeing pitches come May, come June. You know, because right now he's got the strikeout percentage, like you said, kind of where you want it. It's sub 20%. And if Ruben Odor can maintain a full season strikeout percentage under 20%, that's a pretty big shift. Walk rate is, I mean, it's just a couple of games, but he's walked twice in those couple of games, and he's only struck out five times so far, and that's incredibly good.
So I think that matches his walk total from all of last year, right?
it's pretty close, if not. We're in the right ballpark, as it were. Yeah, so we've got a couple of games behind us, you know, 3-6 going in. Not the worst. Would have been nice to pick up three games from the A's there, but picking up even one from the Astros, you can't get too mad at them for at least not getting swept by Houston. That's just a team that looks like a juggernaut this year.
They're going to make a lot of teams look stupid this year, so mm-hmm. you don't have to keep your head down over that one. That's probably going to be three quarters of the league. That's how they're going to be faring against Houston, and I think they're really that good. They're the World Series champs, and then they just went out and improved themselves in the offseason.
Yeah. And as Hayden pointed out last episode, it's been encouraging so far, and especially considering that we actually got to play Houston first, that the team seems to be getting strikeouts. We are still striking out more than one guy an inning, which that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Or at least we were going into today. Perez, I think, only got the one strikeout in his 5 1/3, I think, is what he went.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, so that might have shaken things up a little bit.
But I think Perez, when he's got things going right, he doesn't need the strikeout. He pitches to contact a lot, and that's one of his strengths. He's got his infield defense playing well behind him. That's going to mean good things for him.
Yeah, I thought it was a fairly encouraging first outing for Martin. Velocity and location looked like Martin Perez. Didn't get any strikeouts, but he also did not walk anybody. If he's minimizing the strikeouts, but he's not giving up any walks, that seems fine. Like you said, he gets pretty effective results. Did give up 10 hits. Just from my couch perspective, it looked like a lot of those were just balls that managed to find gaps. He was fine in the outfield, grass a little bit more than maybe you'd expect to see. Just very Oakland A's kind of game.
Yeah, but even that, you can find some encouragement in that, because Perez historically has been the kind of pitcher that, you know, when he makes a mistake pitch and it ends up in a single or a double, then it gets into his head and it leads to a big inning for the other team. And he seemed to keep himself in check today.
Yeah, that was very much the case. And it's something that we've talked about here before. I know that a lot of Rangers fans have had in their heads, you know, if he can make that next step and kind of get where he needs to be as a pitcher and as a professional, he's still got all the stuff to be a pretty damn effective pitcher in the modern major leagues.
And he just what was it, just within the last couple of days turned 28. He's still a young guy.
Yeah, he really is. And speaking of young guys, like I referenced earlier, today, of course, is opening day for minor league franchises across the country. We are in later episodes going to dive more into the farm system. I don't know if you've kept up with any of the minor league games today.
I have not.
Don't bother. We're losing all of them.
Well, thank you for saving me the trouble.
Yeah. Hickory and Kinston have both, or down east, I guess, have both dropped their opening games. And Frisco is currently losing to the Tulsa Drillers, and Round Rock is losing to Memphis, so the farm is at least paying homage to the big league team.
Well, scores matter a whole lot less in the minors. I was reading something recently where, you know, a lot of the pitchers, not only are they on a short leash, but they're not allowed to throw some of their secondary pitches early in the season. So, you know, if you're throwing nothing but fastballs, it's going to be hard to get good results.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely a lot of guys who are pretty interesting and it'll be worth keeping an eye on in the early going. I think we're going to go through our sort of hot list pretty soon, pick out a couple of minor league names that stand out to each of us. There's definitely some dudes to be excited about lying around out there in Rangers prospectum. It's not quite the stocked pantry I think some of us had gotten used to for a couple of years there, but there's still plenty of really interesting guys, and we've got some interesting pitchers, which is a little bit new. We'll see at least one or two of those guys come up with the big league team this year, and I think there's definitely some reasons to be encouraged about the farm system.
I would definitely agree with that. So do you have a player that you're keeping an eye on who you hope to see as a breakout player this year?
Breakout player. That is an interesting one. I've had a couple of guys that I always like to keep in mind. One of my favorites is a pitcher named Adam Choplik. He's going to be with Frisco this year. Enormous. He's like 6'9", 6'10", lefty. Went to Oklahoma, so if we have any college baseball fans who are listening out, you may be familiar with Mr. Choplik. He's been pretty much exclusively a reliever in the minors since his first year, where they did experiment him as a starter a little bit. I'm always a sucker for real big guys. He controls his body pretty well. He can get up into the mid-90s, and for a 6'9" lefty, that's pretty encouraging. I'm not sure he's an impact arm at any point in his career, but he's a guy who I think has a path to the majors and could be an interesting part of a bullpen. So he's definitely somebody I'm keeping an eye on. I think one of the big pop-out areas for me are guys who aren't necessarily anonymous, but are probably not well known outside of Ranger circles, and that's some of the guys who've been moving around the diamond a lot. So Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was a middle infielder, mostly a shortstop originally, and he's played everywhere, and by everywhere I mean he catches. And he catches well from eyewitness accounts, and that's very fun. Catching is obviously incredibly valuable, and anybody who can fill multiple bench roles or maybe even transition into being a starter, just depending on if that bat comes along, that's somebody to really keep an eye on. It's a fun name. He's an easy name to Google for Rangers fans. He's going to be somebody pretty fun to keep an eye out for and see what he manages to do this year.
So do you think that he could be the start of a trend? Because it's really intriguing if you could have one utility infielder that covered all the infield positions, because the Rangers are doing that with Josh Morgan now as well, aren't they?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if we keep him as a catcher. He is listed as a catcher on Frisco's roster, also a middle infielder. Kind of different approaches. Morgan is a very good hitter, although he doesn't really hit for very much power. Good bat-to-ball skills. Not Willie Calhoun-level bat-to-ball skills, but he does make some contact. Also has worked out behind the plate. It's going to be interesting to see how much he actually catches this year. And what that glove looks like. Catcher is a fairly deep position for us in the farm. We don't have a lot of huge national names right now, but we've got a lot of guys who could really turn into something interesting if everything breaks right. Jose Trevino is probably the one that folks are the most familiar with. Oral Roberts, same school that Chichi Gonzalez went to. Very polished behind the plate, although the bat took a step back last year. He's going to be in Frisco working with those pitchers. Another guy to look out for, though, and maybe a good trending pop-up name for Rangers prospects is Matt Watley. He got assigned to Down East. Watley has a very interesting profile. He may be one of the higher ceiling guys we have. He hit very, very well in his debut last year. The reviews behind the plate are pretty encouraging. He's somebody to really keep an eye on. If he keeps moving up, if he keeps getting these aggressive assignments, Matt Watley may be your Texas Rangers starting catcher in a couple of years.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the guys I've got my eye on.
Lots of prospects out there. I think there's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about once we get a couple of games under the belt. But I think that's about it for us tonight. Do you have anything else that you wanted to touch on?
I do not, but thanks for including me, and I look forward to a great season.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a season. We'll see what kind of descriptors we can put on it come to the end of the year.
Baseball is always better than no baseball.
That is very true. Difficult to disagree with. Impossible, I would say. Impossible to disagree with. Well, until next time, everybody. I am Max.
And I'm Mike.
And somewhere out there is Hayden. And we are Rangers Rundown. So we will catch you next time. Good night.